And now, I see squared with Jimmy Cavanaugh.
Back again, it's Jimmy Cavanaugh bringing you the IC Squared podcast on IndyCornrows.com. This week, got Scott Agnes, officially of Pacers.com, who's going to sit down, talk schedule, and a whole lot of other things with us. Scott, what's going on? What brings you to us?
I'm doing all right, Jimmy. Thanks for having me on. And you mentioned, yeah, it's the offseason, but there's nothing to the offseason. We've got schedules, we've got coaching hires, we've got pro-am. It's nonstop, honestly.
I'm kind of surprised you bring up Pro-Am. Not surprised, necessarily, but I hear those three things listed. You know, one of those things is not like the other. let's get started right off with the Pro-Am deal. Now, first, us being, you know, I'll put it out there. We're both IU guys. We're interested in the IU-Purdue game with all the alumni that happened in the Pro-Am, but there's more than that going on. I understand Lance Stevenson's going to be playing.
Yeah, in the first week, and it was brilliant. I was talking to Carlos Knox, who runs it. It's the fifth annual Knox Indy Pro-Am. But whatever it was, that was just a brilliant marketing for them to get people back interested in the Pro-Am. So, yeah, as you mentioned, there's a couple games, a 6 o'clock and a 7 o'clock. And then last week they had an IU-Purdue alumni game, if you will, for the 8 o'clock. You even charged $20 at the door, and it was near capacity at Ritter's High School, so it's very impressive. Yeah, the thing I took away most from that, just seeing DJ White from Indiana, and still looking for an NBA job, by the way, he said, bringing up the ball and acting like a point guard, which is far from what he does, but he didn't do too bad, and he was knocking down three-point balls. So it's a glamour. It's just one step above maybe pickup game, that kind of thing, but regardless, it's fun to see the talent, it's fun to see the old names, and it's fun to see basketball in the summer.
So basically the pickup game environment fits Lance Stevenson to a T. Is there any worry about him?
This is such a Lance Stevenson type of event. You'll have where cameras for YouTube are encouraged. Yeah, this is set for Lance Stevenson, who consistently puts puts pictures of himself and goes Born Ready. So he loves that nickname, you can tell.
Yeah, I remember the Born Ready Mobile from the playoffs last year. There was a picture of that got snapped and got some attention.
Oh, he made his own t-shirts and everything, yeah.
Oh, gracious.
He got serious.
I was going to ask, kind of to that point, I don't know if you saw the video, and I'm sure you did. I mean, you know what you're doing. There was a video from a little earlier this summer where Stevenson took to the playground out in New York. I couldn't remember what it was. Yeah. Is there anything specific that he's looking to do, or is this basically him just trying to stay in shape by playing as much basketball as he can? Is there any worry that all these playground events might be hazardous to his health whatsoever? You hear players get hurt in these things from time to time.
Yeah, I think you more worry about side events, whether it's guys jet skiing and stuff. When you're doing basketball, there's always going to be a risk, no matter if you're at a pro-am, no matter if you're on the practice court or you're in a game. And they want him to stay in shape. They want him to keep working on his game. That's why Lance, all his pickup games or whatever, in addition to, I got to give him great credit, last summer he basically changed his mentality and lived at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. I was there nearly every day, and it was rare to go in there and not run into him or see him putting up shots. I mean, today he even posted a picture of himself, working out. They have free reign throughout the field house in the summer, unless there's some kind of big event or circus, you know, that kind of thing. But he's just constantly in there working. Yeah, there's that concern, especially I would say in those New York, pro-am pickup games where it's a different setting, to put lightly, where it's here is more controlled and it's not out in public and, or it's not outside and all that. We're on the streets, which I can't too much speak of because I've never been there. But it just seems like a more dangerous environment where you may have some wrong people hanging around them.
I was more going to say that they're playing these games literally on the blacktop.
they look, from the videos at least, it didn't look too bad. I was more worried about some crowd or some kid running out on the floor or on the court or whatever, just because it's that type of environment. But yeah, the playing surface certainly has some force you to question where they're playing, I guess.
I don't want to worry too much about that. I mean, Lance is Lance, and if there's anything, I know that from watching games last year, you know that Lance Stephenson's a tough guy, even if sometimes he takes contact and doesn't necessarily act like he's a tough guy. Is there anyone, this is another side tangent, Scott, by the way, we're not starting this on an extremely focused beginning, but is there any guy that you're more confident in being okay as he goes down and the announcer thinks that he might be hurt? I think Lance Stephenson did that more than any other player last year. And if,
yeah, oh, yeah. And all the players would give him a hard time about it. Brian Shaw, former associate head coach, would just, he would, that's how, one way he would motivate players. He would make fun of them. He would say, hey, another player's doing this. And he, you know, he would just do things like that. And he was like, Lance, let me show you. This is how stupid it looks out there when you fall. It looks like you just did something, you know, serious. And then you roll right back up and stay in the game. I think that's part of his maturity. You got to realize how young he is. He's born in 1990. I mean, he's very young, and so he's still trying to mature in a lot of different areas, and he has taken great leaps in the last year, and I think he's continuing to do so.
Which is exciting. I'm a big Born Ready fan.
Yeah.
Now, I want to get back to him in a little bit, but first, the schedule came out. We're taping this on a Thursday. The schedule came out, I think, 2 days ago. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, that sounded right. It came out 2 days ago. Pacers are featured on national television 17 times. Technically, they're 10 times on ESPN and TNT. No ABC games. I was kind of surprised at that. First, can you explain the difference between, you know, the actual nationally televised games and the NBA TV games?
Yeah, that's something that needs to be explained. How it may be put out there in some outlets and various things that they have 17 nationally televised games. Well, I disagree with that. It's 10. They have 8 on ESPN and 2 on TNT, and as you said, none, surprisingly, on ABC. I thought they'd get one from what they did at least, maybe a Pacers Heat game. But in addition to those 10, they have 7 on NBA TV. Which the league will classify also as national TV games. But in the end, how many people, your casual fan, are flipping to NBA TV or are going to come across it? It's those true national TV games of the ESPN, TNT, and ABC. The Pacers have, so they have 10 of them. Last year they were scheduled for 7. 2 of them got dropped. If you remember, one of them was for the Heat Bobcats, actually. And this was, it came just before the Heat lost during that big streak of theirs, and they kept it on. And then one of their TNT games was actually dropped because of the sad Boston event. So they only ended up having 4 last year after being scheduled for 7. So 10 is nice. 10 is probably above league average, but I think they'd like to be in that upper teens, the 18 to 20 range. I think I saw the other day New York had about 25. And I can get that in some respects. It's a much bigger market. Much bigger fan base, I gotta imagine. But at the same time, Pacers are a better team. They made it to the conference finals. They have a more intriguing team. They don't have a star player necessarily, face of the team, a star player of Carmelo Anthony. But I am curious to see if this team will catch on nationally and being just a team everybody can root for.
Yeah, I was upset for a couple reasons. Not upset, maybe, but something close to it. Especially the fact that New York and Chicago, I believe, are on ABC twice, that they're giving us that matchup twice. I don't have a problem with Chicago. I think they're going to be a better team than people are giving them credit for. But New York, I think last year they might have peaked. I mean, I don't think that this New York team is going to be as good as last year's New York team. They get 2 games on ABC against the Chicago Bulls. And anyone who watched the Bulls last year knew that they were unwatchable. You could not do it. You could not sit through a game unless Nate Robinson was somehow prominently involved. Now, Derrick Rose is back, and that's going to be something that's a lot more interesting with the Bulls. But I'm right with you, Scott. I think there are a lot of Pacer fans wondering how in the world they only got the 10 nationally televised games. They'll be happy with what they got. But it seems like the Roy Hibbert critique from the end of the playoffs last year still applies.
Yeah, I certainly agree with you with that. If in the last year in the playoffs, TNT sent out a press release, or Turner technically sent out a press release saying the Pacers Heat was the most watched NBA game ever. Yeah, the Heat have a lot to do with that and the battle and everything, but Pacers are some of that too as well, so why not? I'm surprised you don't see a Pacers Heat or a Pacers Oklahoma City or Pacers Golden State on ABC. I think that's a matchup that people would be intrigued by. A couple of teams, maybe one from either conference even, or a division battle like Chicago that I think people could grab hold of. But you do mention New York and Chicago, and I will go back to my point there, being bigger audience and bigger cities. But I do think Indiana, what they did this last year, and what they might possibly do these next couple of years warrants a few more games in front of a national audience.
That will be interesting to see if that does end up playing up a little bit more. I want to go through some of these games that the Pacers have, especially on ESPN. We'll start there because they only have a couple of TNT contests. I'm interested, starting right off, Indiana-Chicago seems like it's going to be a game to circle just early on. Derrick Rose presumably back. Indiana-New York also in November. That one on the 20th. That one in Madison Square Garden. And then just looking one more in the first half of the year, Pacers go to Miami to face the Heat. That seems like three high-profile opportunities to raise the level of this team as far as awareness goes nationally.
Yeah, I would agree. And admit those three make total sense to be on ESPN. As you mentioned, the Chicago, we all expect Derrick Rose to be back. The Pacers hope that Danny Granger will be back as well, and that will be their big addition in the offseason. It's not official yet, but from Chicago's announcement, it appears the Pacers in Chicago, as you would expect being so nearby, will face twice in the preseason. But this is where the division will really heat up once again, get things started, a home game for the Pacers. I know I wrote in my Pacer.com story that, as always, this is a game where George Hill will want more mustard rather than ketchup in the stands. And so, yeah, with these three games, Chicago, New York, Miami, it's a great opportunity for the Pacers to showcase what they have early on. I think with this bench that I'm sure we'll get into, that will take a little bit of time, but they're all terrific players. They've been playing in, at a high level for quite some time that I don't think it'll take so long. And part of the Pacers' problems, both with the fan base and TV audience, is remember how slow they started, 10-11 early on. Ratings, hits, everything was down during that time because they got off to a slow start, and it took a while for the fan base and even in the national perspective to pick up on what the Pacers have and what they can do. So if they could, that'd be key for them. They play six of their first nine games at home. They got to take advantage of that, get off to a fast start, get fans behind them, and what a season it might be.
Yeah, I just want to see if the fans are going to show up this year. And nothing against Pacer fans. I don't want to put you on the spot there, but I'll come out and say this, that last year when the Pacers finish in, the bottom third of the league in attendance as far as overall numbers go, and they're in the Eastern Conference Finals, that's not good enough. And I know that there was the fact that they didn't do very well at the start of the year. I thought that they were going to suck the way they started last year, but they did turn it around.
You weren't alone there.
Yeah, but the people didn't show up. The fans were not in the stands for that second until the very end of the second half of the season and going in to the playoff games. Is this something where it's a make-or-break year for the Pacers fan base, so to speak? Because there's no excuse now not to come to these games when you have one of the top five teams or so in the NBA.
Yeah. You have one of the key things, too, is you have great players and you have likable players. How can you not like Roy Hibbert? He's a team guy. He stands up for his teammates. He paid Lance Stephenson fine last year when he backed him up.
Is that allowed, by the way? Sorry to cut in. Is that allowed? Can he do that?
Well, it happens. So, I mean, what's going to stop him from Lance paying the fine and Roy throwing him the money?
Nothing, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to stop him from that. But, you got George Hill who gives his heart back to his hometown. Paul George is a likable guy, and that's part of what this team is. What the Pacers salespeople and ticket brains that know a lot more about it than I do keep stressing is that especially in a market like this one, it takes time. It takes a couple years. It's not just going to happen after a great playoff run or one specific event. It takes time. They're going to have to part of what they're really hoping for, like I mentioned just a moment ago, was starting off well. Because if that happens, fans will be more inclined to buy, say, 11-game ticket packages, which, of course, we encourage you to do. Just things like that. The earlier you can get in there, ingrained in fans' heads, the better you off during the season. I forget the official numbers, but the renewals are just outrageous this year. Something like 90% or 90-95% were renewing for this next year. Plus, they were adding on a number of fans. You spoke about attendance last year. They were up 1,000 per game over the year. I know they'd like to be a little higher than that, but they did finish 25th in the league in attendance. And to me, you're not going to. Although I think they want to crack the top 10, that kind of thing, I see them more in the 13 to 18 range. That's realistically where I think they can be and should be.
That's something, I guess, that's good to shoot for. I remember even when they were doing really well, when they came out gangbusters in 2003 and 2004, they didn't have spectacular attendance numbers, and I guess that's partially just the way it is around here as far as an NBA market goes. But like you said, you got to be better than 25th if you're one of the top teams in the league. And I guess this is the year we'll get to see that.
Right, yeah. There's great attendance numbers if you go to ESPN.com. I'll plug them there. The fact that they have a great attendance breakdown. The best I remember seeing the Pacers was 15th. And that was in 2004 or 2003, I believe, 2004. And so, you know, 15th, if they could get back there, I got to believe they'd be very happy. Getting
in
that 15 range.
Yeah, and one of the guys who has been brought in to help them do that, small transition there, to the coaching staff. We'll change gears a little bit here. Mm-hmm. Scott, and I want to talk about Nate McMillan, the guy they brought in. You're around the team a good amount of the time. You're around Banker's Life all the time. Nate McMillan is in as a very experienced assistant coach. I know that a lot of people were worried when the Pacers lost Brian Shaw. Is it too bold to say that this has a chance of even being a small upgrade over Brian Shaw? I think Nate McMillan's a very strong candidate.
The trouble I have with that is it'll take time. And Shaw already had 2 years invested in with this team and with these guys. He grew with Paul George before he was the Paul George we know. And same thing goes for Lance Stephenson. He already knew the buttons to press. He already knew how to talk with Vogel and really help him in specific areas, say. I agree with you, though. I think McMillan is a home run hire. When I heard his name and the fact that not only were the Pacers interested, but he was interested, he actually told me in Orlando he made the first call during the summer. He called before even Brian Shaw got his job just because, like everybody else, he expected Shaw to land somewhere. It's spectacular hire. Pritchard also was saying when he first received a call and knew of McMillan's interest, he told me, okay, shut it down. That's our guy. Now it's just putting pen to the paper and making it happen. McMillan said he's still interested in being a head coach. He actually interviewed for three positions this summer, one being Detroit, Atlanta, and Milwaukee. He also specified that he didn't pull his name out of one of those, so he didn't say which one. So, yeah, you're bringing in a guy with over 900 games experience. He's got three gold medals, two in the Olympics. He's learned under Coach K. He's a former player. That's huge in Vogel's eyes and one of the key points, I'm sure. He's still relatively young, just 48, can relate with the guys, that kind of thing. So, yeah, this is a very, very encouraging hire, and I think all the players are happy with it.
Is he the kind of guy who can do similar things as Brian Shaw? I know they're both former players. What are some of Nate McMillan's strengths as a coach? Something that you understand that he's going to be able to step right in and contribute positively?
Well, I think one, being vocal, he's just 40. He's still crafting how he wants to be a head coach. He's done quite the job, but there's still learning pains and maybe situations that McMillan can provide some experience. He does expect to do a lot with the growth of players, particularly, you know, those Paul Georges, Lance Stephenson. Now you're looking at, Solomon Hill and Orlando Johnson. in going to that, developing players, he had Brandon Roy. He wanted to work with Greg Oden, and then, of course, those injuries. So he's had experience in doing that. But more than anything, I think it'll just be his experience. That would be my X factor when it comes with him. Because there's nothing like, whatever your profession, there's nothing like just doing it and being the top guy, too. Coach Vogel told him that he doesn't want him to be a specific defensive guy. That will be Bert. He just wants him to do everything. With Shaw, talking with Dan Burke and Jim Boylan, Boylan now is in San Antonio. Those two sort of did the scouting reports, the defense, offense, that kind of thing. Then they brought their scouting report and how they thought they should approach the game to Brian Shaw. Then with their three minds, they touched it up, made some changes to Shaw, gave some input, and then they brought it to Vogel. I would expect the same with McMillan as well.
I also think it's really neat that Frank Vogel is confident enough in his role as the Pacers coach to bring in a successful former NBA head coach to his staff and not worry about it. I mean, what does that say about Vogel's level of confidence in his job?
Yeah. If you know Vogel, you know he does not lack any confidence, whether it's in himself and his players, the team, or his people. I mean, whether, you know, Coach McMillan, for instance. And so, yeah, the fact that he wants to be challenged. He wants guys that will say, hey, what if you did it this way? And bringing on McMillan, a guy with a very different background that played in the league, he offers that perspective. And I think, yeah, the fact that he's bringing in a guy that will challenge him, may not say yes to everything, I think not only will it make Vogel a better coach, just like I think Shaw did that, I think it'll make the Pacers a better team because you're just getting so much more in McMillan, and he'll just add a ton to this coaching staff, I think.
I'm really excited about the hire. I said it before. I'm going to reiterate that. I think Nate McMillan, we're on the same page. He's going to be a home run guy, especially on a staff with Frank Vogel, all the confidence and stuff that he brings. I was talking to somebody with knowledge inside the Pacer organization, Scott. I have some sources outside of yourself. And he was saying that Frank Vogel is absolutely in love now with this team. He is saying that he finally has the team that he wants to coach. He's got just about everything that he could ask for, and he's ready to make a run, and he's ready to make a run at an NBA championship to an even greater extent than they did last year. How good is this team? Let's just start there. I think these guys are going to be really good.
Yeah, no question. I think they'd be second in the Eastern Conference. And what they've done with their bench, adding Copeland, adding Scola and C.J. Watson, and then assuming, which the Pacers are right now, that you get an all-star back in Danny Granger, even if he's 80%, I think that's enough to push you over the Heat. Remember, they were one game within the finals. I think that's enough to push them over the edge and knock off the Heat. What the Pacers' strength is the depth, we think, now. It looks like, if a guy's in foul trouble, next man up. A guy's having an off night, that's no problem. Louis Scola started 86% of his games. If David West having a rare off night, Louis Scola will be there. If Granger's not hitting shots, Chris Copeland can do that. Whereas, it's sort of LeBron and everybody else. You got to expect greatness from LeBron. But if Wade and Bosch aren't having a great night, you may get something from Allen. Then they're having some struggles. New York doesn't really entice me very much. They added Andre Bargnani, met a world peace. Brooklyn reminds me of New York last year, just a lot of old guys, plus Darren Williams, and, Joe Johnson and Brooke Lopez. I do like some of what they do, but also I noticed down in Summer League, and things may change, obviously, but it was Lawrence Frank, the assistant coach, handling everything. Jason Kidd, he's learning on the job, so that might take a few years, and with the players they got, I don't think they have a few years to wait. So Lawrence Frank in that situation, I think, was a huge hire, and critical. But I think hiring Jason Kidd could possibly hold them back of achieving something. And also remember, now they'll be in the first year of this solid core after they made that blockbuster trade with Boston. So I like the Pacers second in the East, maybe number one, but that'll have to play out in the four-game regular season series and then into the playoffs.
I want to get back to one thing that I noticed in the rundown that you just did. You completely omitted the Chicago Bulls, something that I'm sure that Chicago fans won't be too happy about. They're getting Derrick Rose back. I see the Nets and the Bulls as Indiana's main competition in the top of the East. I don't even think New York is there. I think New York is in a third tier. Miami, Miami's at the top, we say right now, is the defending champions. I think those are the three teams that are in there. What do you think about the Nets and how they match up with the Pacers? I'm a little worried about it because the Pacers didn't play them well last year, and the Nets got even better.
Yeah, that's true. Where I really worry about that matchup is the point guard, because George Hill showed last year he has difficulty guarding some of the elite point guards. He had about four games straight where he had Chris Paul, Ty Lawson, Darren Williams, and a couple other guys. And Darren Williams had an excellent offensive performance in one of the games in Baker's life. I want to say went off for something like 37. So that's the position that worries me. Hibbert, Lopez, that breaks even. I'll take a West over aging Kevin Garnett. I'll take Paul George over a Joe Johnson or a Paul Pierce, either one. I like the Pacers in that. I didn't purposely, I guess, leave them out. But I think until I see Derrick Rose play, just like I'm curious about Granger, but I think regardless, the Pacers will be better if you knock those two out, just like they were this last year. I think I want to see what Derrick Rose can do before I'll even know where they'll position. You know, with Coach T, I guess, with Thibs, you know, they'll be in the top of the East somewhere, 1-5-ish. But Derrick Rose, if you have him back to 2011 MVP, yeah, you're fighting. You're in that top tier in the East, no question. I mean, you got a Jimmy Butler that's sort of like a Paul George who's emerging star, I think, playing great defense. Of course, Luol Deng and all of them. And, Joakim Noah. I do like the Bulls, but it all hinges on that Derrick Rose factor.
I think Derrick Rose is going to be fine. I'm in the camp that says he took all this time, could have probably come back in the playoffs last year and spent this time getting to 100%. The Bulls scare me, not only in the East, but in the Central. I'm not totally sold on the Pacers winning the Central Division, even with a totally loaded team. The top of the East is absolutely stacked. I think there's a legitimate shot for each of these teams in that tier, the Nets, Bulls, and Pacers, to win anywhere from 55 to 60 games. I mean, they're all that good, I think.
Yeah, no, I would completely agree with you. I don't know what it is, but I am just hesitant about the Nets with the new coaching, the new trades, new chemistry, some egos on that team. I feel like they're going to have some growing pains. So at least I do see them performing well, finishing top of the East, but I'd still like the Heat, Bulls, Pacers ahead of the Nets.
I guess we can go talk back about the Pacers. You mentioned their bench, and we are trying to keep this Pacers-centric. It is on Indy Cornrows. I was going to ask just the idea of Danny Granger. He didn't play all last year, with the exception of a couple games that I think everyone would rather forget. Is it more likely, do you think, that Granger is a viable player this year or a viable trade asset if he begins to play well and the Pacers are lacking in one area or another? Because he's extraordinarily valuable either way. He's an expiring contract.
Yeah, well, when you look at it, I think number one, they're thinking championship. They haven't had an NBA championship in this franchise. So if he's good to go, he's really contributing to the – not only is he playing well, but he's contributing to what the Pacers are getting done. I feel like they'll keep him and try to make this push for a title this year. Long term, you got to think what you have to think about. They're going to give Paul George a max contract. You got to imagine that's just a matter of signing the dotted lines. He told me a couple weeks ago that there was a rough draft for him of a new contract coming. But that leaves no real money for Dan Granger, especially not at 14.2, which he's making right now. So what the Pacers, I would imagine, would like is to get a guy on the cheap, or I can't imagine draft picks at this point because they're in a win-now mentality. You're not trying to build. You're looking for a guy on the cheap that can really provide something that you lack in or you struggle with. And so they will have to seriously consider if he has some value from some teams after showing that he could play. They will have to entertain some offers. But I think if he's really contributing to what they're doing and getting wins and, you know, hitting that invaluable shot. It wouldn't surprise me for them to keep him on roster and risk it, because there's little chance, I got to believe, of him re-signing just because of no money. Little chance of that he would just walk at the end of the year and go find some money elsewhere. But you really want to go for this championship, and this, you know, the frame of doing that is so small in the NBA that they got to make that push. You got to imagine Herb Simon, he's long overdue to get his championship, and that's ultimately the goal.
Does the fact that Danny Granger is this close to playing for a championship after all those years playing for those crappy Troy Murphy, Mike Dunleavy teams, does that make him any more likely to be okay with a role coming off the bench? Is that something that you can see? Because I want to see Lance Stephenson start. I'm on the born ready wagon.
Yeah, there's that's a tough one because there's a little ego involved. One of the elder guys on the team, he's been through the troubles. He's always been, you know, from very early on, he's been a starter. He was sort of the face of the franchise once Jermaine O'Neal left. And now I think honestly it'll just depend on what he can contribute. I don't mind. It doesn't really matter, and I don't think they care who's starting. They want whoever it is to keep getting challenged by the other. So, you know, Vogel in his end of the year press conference, which he said, well, Granger was our guy. He's going to be our starter. You know what? This is what I'm telling Lance. I'm telling him to don't think of it that way. You go win that spot over. And if you can have those two battle it out, even, you know, and whoever wins it, the others, that's quite a secondary option coming off the bench. I don't think, either way, I got to believe if Granger's healthy, they will not mind. They'll just be happy to have him back contributing, even if it's for 15 minutes, 20 minutes a game.
That's one of the things that I'm worrying about, though. You mentioned ego. And Danny Granger's shown some ego in the past as a guy who doesn't necessarily, who has not been able to break bad habits formed on those really bad teams. I just remember him chucking up shots in the 2 years after he averaged basically 25 points a game. I just became a shot hunter, and he can't do that on this offense especially. And Lance Stephenson seems to fit that a little better. That's a worry for me. I'm also worried about the Pacers having too many guys. They've got 11 players, by my count, who could be able to step in and play a meaningful role on this team. I don't know what the playoff rotation looks like right now. It seems like they have just one or two too many bodies for when they get to the stretch.
I think that's the reason Vogel's smiling. He said, this is great. I'll just wait to see how this plays out. You know, that's what the regular season is really for. And then you'll get that lineup down. There's certainly a good 10, 11, yeah, like you said. But this is how I think of it. I almost like Stephenson coming off the bench because he can sort of be the leader, the leading scorer in that second unit. But he always provides that spark, gets those crazy eyes, and runs down the floor like they call him Forrest Gump. And with Granger, that opens everything up for everybody else on the court. And there's a more complete starting five, I think. You have Paul George who can do everything. And if you can get Granger in there, and all you get from him for the most part is a couple of rebounds and some spot-up threes, which opens everybody else out. I think that's a huge asset with that starting lineup.
I tend to agree with that. I'm a little worried about Paul George as a shot creator in that offense. I'll go on the other way. I liked what Lance Stephenson did as far as things breaking down on offense. You got 5 seconds to get a shot. Lance has the ball in his hands. He's going to be able to do something with it that I don't think Danny Granger is as capable of doing. I like the idea of Granger in that second unit as someone who you can toss the ball to and have him be basically a volume scorer with those guys, him, Scola, as the offensive focuses. And
the thing I look at that is that's what Copeland is. He's going to be that guy that will knock down the open shot.
Well, where's Chris Copeland? That's another question. I don't know where Chris Copeland fits in now. I just don't know where he fits.
And I will say this. I wouldn't necessarily expect – I don't expect, actually. You know, hey, here's the starting five. Let's send four subs in. This is mostly our second unit. It wouldn't surprise me to see all kinds of lineups. The starting five minus West and put in school at some time. Not in the starting lineup, but throughout games. You could see Granger at the four. You may see Copeland at the three. I think Vogel has alluded to at some point he's going to entertain and consider playing some small lineups that have some scoring ability, much like the Heat did with, like, Ray Allen, LeBron, Wade, and that kind of unit. So it wouldn't surprise me not him to go a little unconventional and not necessarily have your, you know, your starting five and your second unit, but mix back and forth, in turn helping every unit that's on the floor. No longer will there just be, all right, these guys need a break. Let's get, I guess we got to go to the second unit. I don't think we'll see that anymore.
How do you feel about each of these individual guys as far as upgrades over who they originally had, who they had last year? C.J. Watson over D.J. Augustine, basically, you know, Luis Scola over Tyler Hansbrough. Where did they get better from spot to spot from last year to this year?
Simply all over, I believe. I think D.J. Augustine I like the guy, but he just seemed uncomfortable or unhappy. He didn't talk about it at all. He didn't seem comfortable in that role. He needed to start. He was one of those like Hansbrough that needed to start. So I think you're getting a huge upgrade. Watson's another guy that I think he shot 39 or 40% from three range last year. That's an area the Pacers need help in, is the long range ball. So I think DJ Watson's a huge upgrade. Quite possibly, up until that Scola deal, I thought he was a bigger move than Copeland. Copeland, I'm the most skeptical about him, only because I'm worried that he'll be that guy that had a great season last year and will be unable to replicate it. If you think back to Gerald Green, he had that in the Nets and then wasn't able to duplicate it. I don't think it'll be anything like that. Don't get me wrong. But
please don't compare Chris Copeland to Gerald Green.
No,
please.
No, but that type of thing is where I'm getting at. And then Scola, I mean, that's huge. He's a starter in this league. And the fact that you're going to have him come off the bench, I think it will mean less minutes for Wes, which is a good thing. Although Wes is a gamer, and he's gonna play it off and say he wants to play more. But I think that will help him in the long run, not getting all that wear and tear. And Scola is going to be a guy that can bring a lot of scoring to that second unit, which is what they didn't have. Pacers' bench was the second worst scoring bench in the league. They were just brutal. I think it was behind Portland, who has also upgraded their bench mightily here in this offseason. He has the ability, depending on his 20 minutes or so in the game potentially, of getting 13, 14 points, in spurts. So, honestly, I think all these upgrades are huge. And so seeing what the limited action of Solomon Hill in Orlando Summer League, I think he'll be much like Orlando Johnson. And a couple months into the season, he'll start cracking the rotation quite maybe a little bit and earning some time in some areas that they may need. I really like what he was able to do, his defensive ability. His corner three is excellent, and his maturity is already on par, much because he's a four-year player.
Is there a spot in this rotation for Orlando Johnson, who you just mentioned?
That remains to be seen. This might be one of those cases like last year with Jeff Pendergrass. And Vogel just said he has done nothing wrong. He's just behind the other guys, and I can't find minutes for him. That may be what it is for Orlando Johnson, that he did nothing wrong. He hadn't been able to trump the guy in front of him. There's a couple guys he could play to, you know, what have you. He could even bring the ball up in some situation. It could be somewhere, gosh, I just don't have minutes for him. I don't know. That'll be an interesting storyline to watch.
Yeah, that'll be something to keep an eye on, because I liked what Orlando did last year, even when he came in against the Heat for limited minutes. The guy just seemed like he was able to play. It seems like there should be a spot somewhere for him, but like you, I just don't know where that spot is.
Yeah, and it might be he's another guy that can seem to come in and knock down shots, and you really can't have too many of those guys. If the guy's off, next man up, let's go to Orlando, that kind of thing.
I guess that's a good mentality to have. Scott, one more question before I let you go, and I'll bring a full circle back to the back to the schedule that we saw. Opening night is going to be Victor Oladipo and the Orlando Magic coming to town, to Bankers Life Fieldhouse. Are we going to see, I'll bring it back to the George Hill terminology, are we going to see more ketchup or mustard in the building that night? Are we going to see some Victor Oladipo IU jerseys in the house?
You will see some, absolutely. And first of all, about this game, how perfect is it for really both franchises, I think? you want to big game that old track if you're the Pacers, but and because you got to believe an opening night, especially with this, it will sell out. I got to believe anyway, just because everybody's antsy to get the season going. But if you have a team low ball, if you think about a Philadelphia team that looks to be one of the worst teams in the league this year, that's not very attractive. And maybe it'll just sell out anyway because it's opening night. But this one, being the Magic, if the Magic go anywhere else, it's not that much of an intriguing game. So first of all, I think this is a great part of NBA scheduling. It might have been at the Pacers requesting. I'm not sure about that. Secondly, I've never. A lot of people say, "Hey, let's bring back Eric Gordon. Those kind of things." That will just jump attendance. No, that's not at all. The same way it goes with Gordon Hayward or something like that. You do see a small bump in ticket sales, like you bring a local guy in or a guy with Indiana ties or something like that. So, here with Victor Oladipo, don't forget, Purdue has the connection too, Etuan Moore. Sure, it's not going to be as strong. So you'll see a lot of Indiana fans, so you'll see some Purdue fans. But I think more than anything, you'll just see Pacer fans ready to get the season started.
And I think we are about ready to get the season started, Scott. Too bad it's only mid-August. What do we still have, 6 weeks until camp opens?
Yeah, and don't forget they're going overseas for preseason. A couple of games there. They'll go to Taiwan and the Philippines.
All right, so we won't hold our breath until next time we see the Pacers on this side of the ocean. But hopefully we don't have to hold our breath to have you back next time, Scott. It's been fun. Before I let you go, anything to plug, promote, otherwise?
Just a lot of schedule breakdown this last couple weeks. Last couple of days, I've done a top 10 games in the first half of the season. Today, I did the top 10 games in the second half of the season. There's even one in there that you might be surprised about. At Detroit, why is that an intriguing game? I'll tell you.
Maybe next time we have you on, we might need to talk about that. This Pistons team's going to be a little fun. A little crazy, a little fun.
Unorganized, and I'm questioning the coaching decision.
All of the above. That's going to be either a train wreck or a high wire act. It's going to be so much fun.
That's exactly what it'll be.
All right, Scott, thanks a bunch for coming on. We'll have you next time or in the future. It was a great time having you on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for the invite, Jimmy. I'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good.